Rolling. Let's get this podcast rolling.
Rolling.
Get him up. We're back. What week is this, Jake?
This is number 8. Numero ocho.
Number 8. Oh, yeah. Ocho. Cinco.
Ocho cinco.
And this week's episode, we're going to be talking about the desire to be accepted. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's going to somewhat have to do with the fear of being rejected. I think those are kind of
hand correlated in hand
with each other. And I'm not sure which one it is that we as humans fight against more so. But that's what this week's episode is going to be about.
Yes, sir.
So grab the popcorn, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
So do you want to start this week's episode off again with kind of what we were learning or what we were interested in this week or whatever?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So this week I realized that all of the stuff that I learned pretty much is through listening to podcasts or audiobooks at work, because I don't like get out of work and then read articles. That's just not really something I do. I read books, but the books that I've been reading lately are fictional, so I'm not really reading a whole lot other than maybe a vocab word here and there. But I have picked up learning Spanish again through Duolingo. I don't know if you know what that is, but it was like...
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's like a Spanish... Well, I guess you can learn any language pretty much, but I didn't realize... Because when I was in school, we used Duolingo in hand with like learning in class and whatnot just to speed it up a little bit, or when we had downtime we could learn it, but it never had any ads or anything. But that's something that upset me. It was
today.
Yeah, was that after every lesson there's like an ad now, and it's asking, it's like, oh man. So it's just frustrating not being able to learn Spanish for free on an app. So it's a struggle, but it's going pretty well. So far, it's just kind of recapping over what I learned at one point, but probably forgot. So, but it's going so far so good.
So the main thing you learned this week is that Duolingo app sucks.
Yeah,
because they have ads now.
Yeah, they tried to make it like more like a game than just learning. Like I don't understand why apps do that now. I mean, I get it. But I mean, every ad is like, they're not making any money off those ads. I don't know why they just decided to ruin the whole experience with them. It makes me so frustrated.
And like Duolingo, is it more of a memorization app where you're just repeating a phrase that's being said, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's kind of how it is. Like there's some ways where it gives you a line in English or Spanish and you have to speak into it, like what the phrase would be in Spanish, or it'll say something in Spanish and then you have to type out what it says. Because like the one thing for me is when I hear Spanish actually being spoken by people in real life rather than on the app, I'm confused because they talk so fast, and I can understand what they were saying probably if it was slowed down a little bit. But that's my whole thing, is recognizing what they're saying and being able to actually interpret it. And then before they go on to the next sentence, I'm still trying to realize what they said the last sentence. So then I get lost, and then at some point I just give up trying to understand what they're saying.
Yeah, so it's like when we listen to podcasts and the YouTube videos at 2x speed,
yeah,
that's essentially what listening to Spanish is sometimes, because, yeah, well, it's even probably more than that, because your mind is trying to catch up with, I guess, what internalize and comprehend all of your first memory that you have of the words, and then mm-hmm. also associating those with what was being said, and then associating it with the English word, because that's how our minds think are in English.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah,
if you're listening in 2x speed to a podcast or something, you hear the words, but you don't have to think about the words. You don't have to use context clues to realize what those words mean. You hear oh, in this date at this place, you blah blah blah. And you already know what those words mean, and you don't have to think about what those words mean. So you don't have to slow down, stop the podcast. What does that mean? And then replay it. You just know what it means. But in Spanish, it's just like sometimes you just got to use context clues and like get a general vague idea of what they're saying sometimes. But yeah.
Yeah, because there's no comprehension. You're learning how to comprehend and then apply it to what's being spoken.
Yeah.
Pretty much. No, yeah. That makes a lot of sense. This week, so surprise, surprise, I'm still on the personality book. So
yeah.
This might be the last week, guys, where I share some type of learned experience from the personality book. I'm almost finished, so you guys can all be happy and shout.
Yeah.
You won't have to hear anything more about my personality.
A little hip array.
Yeah. And so this week, the chapter, it was talking about essentially when people do things to us and our reactions to those things, as we base their emotions or how they handle the situation off of their actions. However, when we ourselves do something, our decisions or how we react to something, it's always based off of our intention. And so the book was going, just talking about that the oftentimes you're going to have resentment or frustration if you're judging people based off their actions versus trying to understand their true intentions. And if we take the time to really try to understand, one, the intention at heart, but two, and how that's associated with people's personalities, it's much easier to be able to communicate with people. And I think the more empathetic we are in trying to learn about other people, you know, the better we can communicate. And I think also the more just happiness and peace there can really be. Because oftentimes I think it's easy to just be offended by things that people do because we always feel like it's an attack towards us. But most of the time when we're doing things towards people that seem to be harmful to them or they find offensive, it was never really meant for us to be attacking to them. We maybe could have worded it better or done a better job of it. But if we look at our true intentions or we try to explain our true intentions to them, I think it's, you know, almost always quite evident that people usually have pure intentions.
That's what you read about all this week?
Yeah, that was my main takeaway from the book. It was nice. One of the most enjoyable parts of it, I would say.
Yeah. How long is that book?
Probably like 300 pages, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's, I've read a lot of really, really good books this year, but this is one of the top. Like, I just really love it because it's all about other people. It's all about better communication. And I just realized so many times when I've had maybe previous disagreements or maybe even arguments with people, loved ones, family members, a lot of times it's because of differing personalities and just not communicating or trying to understand the person fully.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what are your thoughts on just people usually having pure intentions?
Pure intentions?
Yeah.
Like in what way?
I don't think most people's daily goal is just to be rude to people, right, to just be offensive to people, to try to hurt people. They don't wake up morning and be like, oh, okay, who can I really piss off today? How can I make somebody mad? How can I destroy their work day? How can I just make this a terrible work week for them? Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, all of us at the end of the work week, we're like, oh, that was terrible. Why was he such a jerk? And it's just like, well, what were their true intentions? And trying to understand that, you know, unfortunately, I don't think we take the time to slow down and to really try to understand those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we struggle. And that's where conflict and disagreements come about.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, people's true intentions, like you said, it's never to, well, I guess not never, but usually people don't wake up and be like, all right, how am I going to, whose day am I going to ruin today? Like, that's not, I mean, people just don't get their rocks off like that, usually. I mean, there's always the exception, but I mean, I feel like most people are just trying to do good and they're trying to make a positive influence in somebody's life, but I feel like sometimes their intentions get stripped away from them based off of the experience they're going through, how their day's going, their mental state. Just there's so many things that play an effect on how people act throughout the day that I feel like maybe sometimes their intentions are a little bit harder to see because of those things. Like if you're just having a bad day or because you're constantly thinking about what happened to you. So if somebody says something to you out of nowhere, your mind is already on that thing affecting you negatively. So you respond negatively usually. And then that person's like, what the hell is this guy's problem? And then they start acting negatively. Or if somebody affects you in a positive way, you're like, oh, I feel like I didn't really deserve that, but it makes me feel a little bit better about it, you know?
Yeah. No, that was interesting. This week I saw some type of video where there's a bunch of people like waiting around at a bus stop. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially an experiment where one guy was looking down at his phone and he just goes, and he just starts laughing.
Yeah.
And then like the people around him, they start like looking over and then like, they're just laughing because, oh, this guy's laughing at something. Yeah. And then it's amazing how the energy, you know, changes. It's just like that laughter creates laughter in somebody else. And I mean, if somebody has a contagious laugh, that helps even more. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah, I can see that.
But the same is true in terms of the snowball effect and negativity, right? If somebody's upset and frustrated, then it's very easy to have that snowball effect with that.
Yeah, I can get behind that, definitely.
But I think, again, even with what I shared, this also falls into the topic of tonight's episode is getting into acceptance, right? So, you know, when you say something or when you do something, nobody really wants someone to confront it or to call us out for being wrong.
I would say for the most part, that's true. If you are trying to learn or get somebody else's perspective on something, like you're trying to just make conversation and learn more about the other person, then maybe. But I feel like for 90% of conversation, that's probably true.
Yeah, and I guess I was thinking about maybe just sharing your opinion on a lot of things. Like, oh, did you hear that new song? Did you watch that new movie? Did you play that new game? And if, every time somebody says, yeah, that was terrible. Yeah, it's that like, was oh, horrible.
It's like, yeah.
And as you continue to do those things, and every time you share things, if there's always that type of negativity that comes from a specific individual or a specific group, then it seems as though those types of people, they stop sharing.
Yep.
Because it's just not a very safe place to share or whatever that might be.
Yeah, even if it's not that it's not a safe place to share, it's like, I mean, you don't want to have people crap on your ideas all the time. Like you say something that you like and everybody's like, oh yeah, that sucked. But don't offer anything in return. It's like, oh, well, thanks for that. Like, you know. It's not necessarily that it's an unsafe place, maybe. Yeah, I guess that would probably constitute as an unsafe place. But, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, every goal in life is to try to have happiness or joy or some type of fulfillment.
Right.
And if it's just never a place where you have a negative Nancy or something like that, that is just always just getting put down or shut down, like, then I think that's where we all start just going into our shells and we just stop. You know, and so that's why it's so important to be in a workplace, in a relationship, even amongst your family, to where you feel like, you know, they accept what you have to say, even though they may not agree with it, that they're empathetic and understanding of those things, to just have a feel like a safe, conducive place to where you can just share who you are.
Yeah. And I feel like if you are in a scenario where even if when you're really young, you start sharing your opinions and your beliefs and everything like that, and you're around a bunch of people who don't necessarily, it's just a toxic environment where people just basically just kind of disagree with you without any form of conversation. Nothing, just basically, oh yeah, I don't like that. I think that's, or I think that song sucked, or just stuff like that. I feel you share less and less, and then no matter who you're talking to, you just stop sharing at some point. And it takes a lot longer to, say you meet somebody and they're super interested in what you're saying and they like to listen to what you say and they ask for your opinion. And I feel like it's harder and harder for you to share. It takes more time for you to start sharing again than it does for you to be the person that shares and to stop sharing.
Once you feel like you've been cut off.
Or yeah. Yeah.
You've gotten to a point where you've went in your shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because really what it is, it's a trust barrier, right? So, mm-hmm. You've labeled someone as not being able, you don't trust to be able to speak wholeheartedly from your heart. And because of that, it's going to take more trust of, you know, being able to speak and not feeling rejected to be able to continue with those words and sharing those ideas.
Right. Yeah. And I guess something that I've been working on lately over the past couple weeks is when I used to work at the rat farm, people would talk just to talk and I would just sit there and kind of agree with them and listen to whatever they had to say without really contributing anything to the conversation. Because, well, to be honest, a lot of the time the conversation wasn't really about anything. They just wanted to sit there and talk so they didn't have to work. But lately when I'm working around people now that can talk and work simultaneously, and it's been, I've seen myself asking more questions and trying to understand their opinions on things more lately, just because, I don't know, they have a conversation, they have a topic of conversation rather than just trying to get out of work, I guess. But I guess that's something I would never really do. I would always be the person that just kind of sits there and kind of listens to what they have to say without offering anything in return in the conversation. And it's amazing how long people will go in a conversation with it being so one-sided. That's what I learned at the rat farm. It's people will sit there and talk and talk and talk, and you do not have to say anything back at all. But
really?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Sometimes I'll just sit there, and I wouldn't even have to even be looking at them. They just keep talking. But I have been better. I've been trying to get better at conversation and actually contributing to conversation, and it's been a fun process.
And this is one thing that I realized that the quality of your questions enhances the quality of your ability to be able to learn what's being talked about. Because if you actually start asking really deep, good questions, you're able to ask questions that will help your mind understand fully what's being said. And it just progresses your learning at a so much higher speed.
Right. And on top of that, the deeper the questions, the better the questions that you ask, it makes the other person, it lets them know that you're interested in the conversation. So it makes them more excited to talk about that topic. And when they're more excited to talk about it, it's a lot easier to learn from somebody who loves what they're talking about and is excited to tell you about, oh yeah, I experienced this and this and that. And you're like, oh wow. And then you ask good questions. They're much more happy to share.
The only downside to that is if you're asking a lot of questions about somebody who loves to talk about something, uh-huh, but they're not very educated on the subject.
Yeah, yeah, that's
just
true.
Making up a whole bunch of crap.
Yeah.
They don't know any of it, or they're just regurgitating it from someone. That's why, you know, I've always wanted to go see Jordan Peterson live.
Yeah.
Mainly because I would like to be able to ask him questions. And, you know, I've started wondering, I used to be somewhat of a tightwad when it came to spending money.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've started realizing that the worth of a ticket to go to one of his events, let's say it's $75.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to get some education, but that, let's say there's $1,000 ticket to where I could sit there and I could ask him one, like questions for a whole hour.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine the difference of how much I would learn versus that on that $75 ticket of him just going and presenting a talking and talking to a general audience versus how much I could learn if I'm able to ask him specific questions about everything that he's ever said so that I can fully grasp and understand them. Like, it would just be like, wow, like I would have just advanced into a Jordan Peterson expert probably tenfold in that time, right, of being able to ask him deeper questions and really have a full understanding.
Right. Because, I mean, yeah, he can put on a lecture, but it's, to a certain extent, it still has to be to where the general public is interested in what he's saying, or not necessarily the general public, just the people that are buying tickets to his shows. It's something that he wants to be broad enough to make them interested, but specific enough to make them feel that it's worth to spend the ticket. But if you can have a one-on-one session with him, you can basically specify as deep or as vague as you want, and just get question after question that way, and he doesn't even have to make it broad enough for a general audience. It can just be specified to one person.
Well, not only that, but I get to articulate the questions from my own words. So let's say his IQ is way up here in the sky and mine's way out here, like possibly below the earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and I'm asking these very maybe deep questions to me, but I'm able to put them in layman's terms so that he can then again give me an answer in layman's terms versus speaking to somebody of his IQ, how he would answer it much differently.
Right.
And so where the question could be in depth, but the way that I ask it, you know, could produce an answer that helps me and maybe more of the general public understand.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I guess, you know, kind of getting back into the acceptance and asking questions and learning and not, you know, not being accepted by talking, I guess, I would say, you know, throughout life, that's been one of my biggest struggles, is when I think I shared previous episodes about going to church, maybe having slightly different religious beliefs than the people I would go to church with, where some of we would line up with some things, but on other things we wouldn't. And I was able to accept them for their beliefs. I could understand where they were coming from, but there were just specific things that they weren't. And so whenever I would bring up those things like, no, I'm not going to celebrate Christmas, or this is why I don't eat pork, it was like, oh, well, this is why you should, and this is why you don't have to worry about those things. It's like it was always them trying to change
me and
trying to tell me why what they were doing was okay. Yeah. Versus accepting my beliefs and the things that I was saying and the conclusions that I was bringing up, and being willing for us to be able to be in community. But that was creating a dividing factor and essentially causing rejection.
Yeah. Do you think that comes from a place of them, they see you as, not necessarily, but how do I word this? Do you think that was coming from a place inside of them trying to give an excuse for themselves?
So previous Chad, before reading this book, it would probably try to come up with some type of an idea as to why they were doing that. But truthfully, you know, I think the only way to really know people's individual intentions is by asking and trying to understand where their heart is. And so it's just so difficult to try to answer those types of hypothetical questions. I've really tried to stop doing that, because it's so easy. Like, oh, what did they mean by that? What was, it's like, I don't know. Why don't you go ask them?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's like, why do we do that? Why do we create these hypothetical ideas of what we thought somebody said, or what they meant by that? And then we go, you know, 5 years later, in our heads, it's like we had a whole full-blown conversation about what we thought they meant about something, and now we're all pissed off. You know what I mean? It's just like, what the heck?
I like creating hypothetical scenarios, not necessarily about what people think. Just, I'll be talking to my wife sometimes, and I'll come up with a hypothetical, and she'll be like, that would never, ever happen. But I was like, yeah, but what if it did? What would you do? And she gets so mad at me. She just stops answering them after a while. It's like, oh.
No, so this is interesting because, I mean, my whole life I used to live like that. Mm-hmm. And it was all hypothetical questions. It was all me having these ideas in my mind about what are these people saying about me? And it was everybody was talking about me, or what did he mean by that at work? Like, why were they like that? And now I've been able to just breathe, be in the present, and just blow things more off where it was just something that went by and it happened. And it doesn't have to have some type of correlation with me and who I am. It doesn't have to be towards me.
Yeah. That's something else that's very interesting to me is people remember, people have memories of, say, I have a memory with you that you said something and it's so vivid to me and I've held on to it for so long and it's just something that is very specific and I remember exactly what happened. And then I bring it up to you one day and I was like, do you remember when this happened to us? And you're like, what? I don't remember that at all. And it's just like, yeah, you were there and I did this and that. And it's just so interesting to me how people remember certain scenarios, but then at other times they talk to those people and they don't remember it at all. So it really makes you think, it's like all those things you're overthinking about, how many of those people are ever even going to think about that situation ever again? How many of them even thought about it when they were doing it in the first place? Like, they could have just been thinking about something completely different and that was just their automatic response. And you're sitting there overthinking about it. It's just, yeah, I think about that a lot.
Yeah, just letting it sit and fester. And then the more it festers, the more you think about it. I mean, it's the same way with learning, right? Mm-hmm. The more time you spend on learning, the more you're going to learn, the more you read, and the more you allow these ideas and these thoughts and these conversations in your head to ruminate, the more fresh they're going to be and the more you remember them and the more present they are and the more they create this story. And then they sit there and then you continue to question the story about, oh, well, what, and then the anger, the emotions that start getting tied into it. It's just it's a downhill spiral. I was listening to something recently where it talked about some of the like number one causes of depression and anxiety, and it has to do with people being disappointed about their lives. Mm-hmm. And they continue to sit and let that fester. They continue to try to think how they can not be disappointed with their lives or why their lives are so miserable, why they're so terrible, instead of going out and just being productive. Maybe it's going to the gym. Maybe it's just going out and being around people. But it's like more of that victim mentality, and maybe it's not so much sharing it with other people, but it's sharing it internally with ourselves and being like, oh yeah, like I can't believe I lost my job, or I can't believe, you know, how bad of a son I've been, or, you know, whatever that is. And then you start, well, this is what made me a bad son, and this is what made me a bad employee, and just, I'm never going to get anywhere. I've never made any money, and now I can't seem to find a job. I'm just worthless. And it's just like, wow, yeah, that just is not going to help you get into a positive mindset.
Yeah, it's very easy to snowball that way. You start thinking negatively, and if you tell yourself it so many times, then you start to believe it, and then you start to believe all these things that are not even true, or they weren't once true, but they're becoming true because you keep telling yourself, and yeah, it snowballs out of control very fast.
And I don't know if it's my sports mindset or the perfectionist mindset, but, you know, it's the same thing I think that happens in batting slumps where you strike out once. I was like, okay. And then it's twice. And then you've struck out 10 times in a row. Yeah. And it's just like, damn, I suck. Like, I'm terrible. Yeah. Like, and then you're worried, like, it's like, what's going to be the determining factor where now I'm hitting like ninth, and then after that, when's going to be the determining factor when I'm no longer hitting and I'm no longer in the game, and then the coach cuts me, and then you start thinking about all those things instead of just being up there present in the moment, seeing the ball, watching ball, reacting to the ball, because now we start thinking about, well, what happens if this happens, and what happens if this happens, and instead of just playing the game and saying, okay, what did I miss there, or how can I improve? It's worrying about just not doing worse.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to see the ball, be the ball.
Yeah. I know what that means.
You know, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. So.
Yeah.
This what?
That's from Dodgeball, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patches of Houlihan.
Yep.
That's a true classic. But yeah, but, where do you think the desire to be accepted stems from?
Well, I think it has to do with just human nature. I think that community is something from the very beginning, whether you're religious or, you know, and even animals, you hardly ever see animals not in packs, mm-hmm. or not around other animals being in a close-knit type of community or something like that. I mean, even lions, right? The king of the jungle, you don't just see one out by itself. Even when they're hunting, you have one laying over here and then there's a group, but they're always together. And I think it has to do with familiarity. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what I was going to say is, growing up in a small town, it's difficult when you have maybe differing beliefs than where you grew up, just slightly, because that's really the accepted norm. Like the town that we grew up in, not as many people move out and leave from there. And so an example I would have is, you know, moving to South Florida, and it's like, what's acceptable here is just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize this is actually happens in normality. I know it's on TV and stuff, but no, it's like, this is the real world. Like you'll go out and there actually are people, like husband and wives, that are like swingers and stuff, like where they're going out looking for other couples. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, are you serious? It's like, yeah. And it's like an ordinary thing, and it happens a lot. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, Jeez. Wow. Okay. Like, this is real. Whereas in Sturgis, Michigan, it's just, you know, I would say it's way more conservative, but you don't see all of these things just any and every day. You could see a wildness that you wouldn't see anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, just people being people. That's raw.
Right. So it's that sense of belonging.
Right. Yeah, I think just us being humans, it's just in our nature, like you said. I mean, we're very communal based creatures, and the sense of feeling like seen and accepted and just being a community is such a huge part of just being social. I think,
yeah.
Do you ever wish that it was like you could just not have any technology and you could just, I don't know, live almost like Amish people? Not like in that way, but just for like a day, you could go live as like an Amish person or something where there's no technology and you just sit down around with the big family and you go play baseball with everybody or you go do whatever Amish people do. But just, I feel like they're just so much more tight-knit almost just because they're not distracted by all these things. They're worried about getting this done and focused on community and focused on family and just being around each other, you know?
So every time I come back home, that's what I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like last week going on vacation where the family was just there at Animal Kingdom Lodge, it was like we weren't really on our phones. It was and I think oftentimes we're on our phones because we miss that connection with other people. And so like we're looking for it. I think, you know, us growing up in such a large family, that connection was always there. So we didn't really have to spend as much time on our phones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do. I know exactly what you mean. And I wish there was almost less social media because it can, like, you know, just kind of suck you in. And that's where I was going into my next point, is what social media has created. And I guess maybe the pursuit of validation or the pursuit of acceptance at such a higher level, mm-hmm. that, because now it's all associated with, if you make a post or you make a story, how many likes do you get? How many people see it? How many people view it? Do they comment on it? Do they not comment on it? And if they don't watch it, does that mean it was bad or that they didn't like it? And if they do comment it, oh, does that mean it's better quality? Does that make you a better quality person? Does that mean that you're better? Like, and then you get more followers. Like, what is this game that we're actually playing? And for me, it's like, what's the amount of friends that you can have that you actually have the ability to communicate back and forth with and still pursue normal life? Go to work, do your job, have a family, and still have some friends. It's like, it's not that many where you can really go in depth and be able to really care about someone and love someone. You know, that's something that I was thinking of in terms of the desire to accept. It's like, I don't think a lot of people, well, I don't think they really understand how much they want to be accepted by just a few people because they're striving to be accepted by everybody.
Right.
But they really just want to be loved to where if their car breaks down or if something happens, that there would be one person out there that would have their back.
And I think they could rely on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Deep down, that's what we're all really, really striving for. And sometimes I just don't think we realize how to go about that properly to be able to find it, because we start spreading ourselves thin and just looking for it in anywhere and everywhere, instead of just having one deep or a few deep connections.
Right. And I think there's something so pure in like tribes, just like anything tribal. Like if you go down to the Amazon rainforest and there's uncontacted tribes that still use like bows and arrows and they hunt whatever, they hunt their food and then they take it back to the site and then they hang out with each other and then the next day they do it all over again. They're not all distracted about, I mean, in their sense, it's we either do this and we survive or we start comparing ourselves and we get up caught in all this drama and we don't get any food to eat. We don't go out and hunt and then we die. And that's basically it. I think there's just something so pure about that because it's gotten to the point where everybody's so comfortable that it's you just start looking for stuff to, I don't know, you'd look for outside stuff that doesn't really matter to give you purpose almost, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think I can relate this more to sports. Like when you're on a team, that team atmosphere, that team camaraderie, I think it's really, really tight-knit, especially when you're in the game and you're competing to win for your community, you know, and you're talking about the Amazon rainforest where they're fighting to survive, to have food, to have any of those things, where in playing sports, you're trying as hard as you possibly can to be able to win.
Yeah, maybe yours is a little bit better of an example. I've never been down to the Amazon, but I just, the idea of it is what intrigues me, I guess. Just that sense of community, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, would you say you've ever experienced anything like that?
I mean, yeah, growing up, it was always like that, it seemed, no matter where we were. I mean, there was always school, and everybody at school is kind of looking to get their friend group and fit in and whatnot, and everybody goes through school differently. But at home, it was always, I mean, there were 8 of us at the house, so it was always something going on, some board game, or we were eating at the dinner table, or we were watching a movie and all sitting there and laughing or whatever. But even when we were at grandpa's house and at A&K, it was still, there was so much sense of community around that you never felt that you were missing out on it.
Would you say you've ever experienced that outside of blood relatives though, or family?
I would say playing sports, definitely. Playing baseball. I guess baseball is probably the only sport where I've really experienced that.
Okay. So I would say mine being in church, that it was a very family-oriented, and I would say that was to a very heightened degree because, you know, again, we were all on the same level of a religious belief, which was essentially a closeness to God, whether you believe that or not.
Right.
I'm just saying that there was more focus or intention, and it made it feel like it was superior because we shared this same closeness, not just with each other, but with the creator of the universe. Mm-hmm. So it seemed as though it made it more powerful and more special than maybe just a family, blood relative community. So that was, for me, quite interesting, because those were people that I felt like at one point in time where even though they weren't blood relatives, that they had my back, right. That they would have taken a bullet for me. And at this point in my life, I think the only people that I could probably say would do that now would be people who are blood relatives,
right?
Versus just some other person who we share some type of a connection with.
Right.
And I mean, I think that's really special to be able to create something like that with people who aren't blood, you know?
Yeah. Just to feel that bond, that sense of community, I think it's so huge. And it,
yeah,
feeling the lack of community, if you don't have that in your life, it's very, I don't know, you're just constantly searching for that, I feel. Or even if you're not constantly searching for that, you're kind of distracting yourself. You're focused on something else.
And the one thing you have to be careful with that, because it's so special to be part of that community and it feels so good, to where you start focus on people pleasing and you don't set boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would say the struggle came inside the religious setting, is that the person who was the pastor or the leader,
the cult leader,
would be, would be able to control people by the things that he would say, because it was essentially, in a religious system, it's thus saith the Lord, and that gives it more power. It makes it more special, makes it more authoritative, mm-hmm. to where it's like, oh, I should really consider this because this could be God speaking to me. And that's where you have to be really careful, because it's like, are you doing this because this is who you are, or do you just want to not offend this person, and do you want to continue to be able to be in this relationship, and you know that if you go against that, that relationship will end.
Was it ever like the leader was saying something and was saying, this is God speaking to me and I'm just speaking to you what he told me? Was it ever stuff like that?
Oh yeah. Oftentimes. And that was something that said, the Lord laid this on my heart, or, you know, I feel like God told me to do this, and those types of things.
Right. Do you ever feel like there was like ulterior motive behind those things? Like
100%.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that it had no benefit as me, but you could see the benefits of how people doing these things would affect them or give them, even whether it's even anything physical, it was definitely the ability to give more power, because as you continue to say those things and people follow through with just doing what is said, that's going to give what you're saying more credence and more power, to where it's a manipulation tactic, to where, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard where you continue to push someone to do something that they don't want to do, and so you start off very easy. Mm-hmm. And it's like boiling a frog in water.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, I'm gonna see if I can push Jake. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, that didn't upset him. So tomorrow I'm gonna hit him on the back. Okay, well, that didn't upset him. Tomorrow I'm gonna, you know, hit him in the back of the head. Okay, that didn't. Okay, and then, you know, it's a gradual process where you, as the individual that get hit, is like, man, like, I didn't like that, but it wasn't too bad. And then the next thing was something. And it's like, well, if you continue to allow and allow and allow, then you're getting punched in the face. It's like, oh, well, I didn't say anything yesterday, so I'm not going to say anything again today.
But
that's where the setting boundaries is really, really important, man. So even though there's a huge desire to be accepted, setting boundaries is just so important as to what we'll allow. But again, it has to do with us establishing what those boundaries are and trying to decide, you know, what that is.
Right. And then at some point, if you didn't set boundaries in the first place and it's gotten to maybe past where your boundaries would have been initially, you need to kind of step back and rethink what's going on. And eventually at some point, put your foot down and be like, no, this is not okay. I didn't set boundaries at the time, but I'm setting them right now. And this is no longer acceptable. Whereas just, okay, well, I didn't set boundaries and it's already there, so I don't want to make me, myself, or them uncomfortable, so I'm just going to let it keep happening. It's, you have to take control of that situation and put your foot down. It's a lot easier said than done, but at some point you need to take care of yourself.
Yeah, and I think this is one area where in the workplace it's very easy to want to be a really good worker, especially if you're like a workaholic or you're a perfectionist and you desire to be admired, to where you can, oh, hey, Jake, can you go grab five bags of cement? Yeah. And, okay, yeah, yeah. And then tomorrow it's 10, and then it's 20, and then it's 40, and then it's 50. And you're doing a great job, but you can start seeing it's like they're just manipulating this, and it started off slow, and now it's gotten to this big thing, and it's like, well, oh yeah, we're gonna need you this year to not take any vacations. Like, ah, okay, you know, this job I'm really important to them, so I'm just gonna go do this. And it's just like, you're just people pleasing because you want to be accepted by the company you're working for.
Right. Why not just call in the cement truck? Why do I have to carry 50 bags of cement, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and these types of things also happen, whether, you know, it doesn't have to be work. It could be your politics. It could be your religious circle, any of those things where it's like, this feels a little weird right now, but I'm not going to say anything because I'm not 100% sure. And then it just keeps getting weirder and weirder and weirder. Yep. And you're like, man, I should have set some boundaries and I didn't. And I know for me, the oftentimes has been guilt. It's like, I didn't say anything and now I can't say anything. It's like, no, Chad, shut the hell up. You can definitely say something. Like, I don't know how you felt starting your new job, but for me, it was, you know, there was just some things said where it was just like, I don't feel accepted here. It's just like, you feel miserable, dude. It's just, you feel real miserable. Have you ever felt that in a new job you started?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I remember this new job, it was like my clothes. It's like, well, you're wearing this. It's like, well, you guys hired me. You guys asked me to come here. And this is exactly what I wore at the other place. It's like, what's wrong with it?
Yeah.
And then I felt like coming in every morning that I was being like stared at. Like, it was just like, I'd be like, hey, good morning. And they'd be like, hey, morning.
Yeah.
Like, wow. And it was just like that. It's just like how someone, the your boss, your leadership responds to you. It's just like, this is terrible. Like, how much longer do I want to keep putting up with this? This is nonsense.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's like just at work, if you see your coworkers or your higher ups even just talking about whether it be clients or other employees behind their back, and the other coworkers are agreeing with them, and they're just going back and forth talking smack about whoever. It's just like you sit there and you think to yourself, it's like, who all are they talking about behind my back, you know? Like, I'm sure once I walk out of this room, they're going to say something about me. And then have you ever like walked out of a room and they were talking about somebody else, and then you forgot something and you walk back in the room and they're talking about you? And it's like, what are you guys even doing? Like, you're not being productive at all. It's
no, but I have, you know, that's the thing. Like, it's just like I hear meetings where people are in the back just talking and whispering and stuff like that. And it's just like, I don't ever walk back in the room or anything like that, because I've came to a point where it's just like, hey, listen, I was hired because of my skills and my abilities, and what other people think about them, I don't really care at this point. But it feels absolutely terrible. I hate it. I don't like it. It's when it doesn't feel like that team atmosphere, it's just miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the fact that people going into new places and just being the main eye for people wanting to cast judgment, I guess. And then it's always hush hush, and I don't know. It's just a bad feeling.
Yeah, and that it's something that I don't really comprehend all that well, because I don't really ever feel intimidated. I don't really ever get intimidated by other people unless they're being aggressive and prideful and arrogant. But I don't really ever feel intimidated by my own abilities because someone else is so good at something. Or if I'm in a job where I've been chosen, to where I'm intimidated by someone else. And I think a lot of that has to do with my decision to give anything and everything my absolute best, so that I can fully accept if someone else is better than me, it's because they've prepared themselves and just done a better job. And right. It's not intimidating to me or a reason for me to be jealous of anyone, because I always try to give my best. And I think that would be a lot easier to be intimidated or jealous if I just never gave anything my best, and I always thought everything was up by chance or by luck, to where how people get are successful or win.
Yeah, I think a lot of that can probably be with how we grew up too. I mean, I don't know how it was for you, but growing up, it was always, I never questioned my abilities because I was always reminded you can do whatever you set your mind to. It's going to take work. It's going to take dedication. But regardless of whatever you set your mind to, you can achieve it. It's not going to come easy, but it's easy to be the hardest working person in the room. You just have to set your focus on something. If you truly want it, then go get it. So it's never been a question for me, at least, whether I have the abilities to do it, but it's rather, is this something that I want to pursue? And if so, how much of my time and effort do I want to put into it and stuff like that? So yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I never really feel intimidated either, because I feel like it's just a confidence thing. And we were raised to have, we had a good example of what confidence looked like, and confidence was instilled in us. And I feel like probably a lot of people didn't have that growing up, so they don't necessarily know their capabilities.
Yeah, it's just very interesting. So for me, like, you know, I enjoy lifting, and I just enjoy going to new gyms. But when I go to a new gym, I don't really ever feel intimidated. Like, I'm just never intimidated by it. It's like, yeah, okay, there's a bunch of people there. But I'll tell you what, I work my ass off, and I work as hard as I possibly can, or harder than just about anybody else in this gym. So it's not like somebody's just going to say, oh, it's not like going to lift is a game or a competition. I'm going there against me. And I think in society, if we're trying to win at something, or, you know, no matter where we are, we have to. The only person that we really compete against is ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't compete against other people, because other people have different natural talents, strengths. They've been brought up in different surroundings. They have different world beliefs. It's just not accurate to ever try to compare yourself or compete with other people. You always have to compete against yourself. Now, you can use their standards and what they're doing. Like, if I wanted to be really good at basketball and I was sitting on the couch, you know, never getting up and shooting free throws, and then there's Michael Jordan, I would probably start looking at him and comparing myself. Yeah, what am I doing compared to what he's doing in terms of that? But in terms of the results, that you can't really compare your results to someone else's. You have to really, I think when it comes to comparison, it has to be the effort that you're making to do whatever it is you want to do.
Right. Yeah. And kind of how you were talking about with the gym, it's, that's how I was with baseball. No matter where I went with baseball, if it was people that were my age, generally, obviously if I was like 12 years old and I walked into a college campus, I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, I can take that guy. I was reasonable with myself, but I never walked into somewhere and felt intimidated because everybody's like, oh yeah, this guy over here, this guy's a stud. He's committed to Vanderbilt and he's doing this. It's like, I don't care. Like, I'm confident in my ability, and I believe that if the competition were to arise, I would be able to prove myself. And I'm confident with how I am as a player and as a person, and I don't feel the need to be intimidated, because then that just, it's going to play games in my head and it's going to make me play worse overall. So it's, I guess I never really thought about it like that, but yeah, I just never felt intimidated in that sense.
And one of the things I would see a lot in sports and in the workplace is this peer pressure, where oftentimes the people who have been part of the team or the company for the longest, and then a newcomer comes on, sometimes they're the ones that are the most intimidated by what's happening. And then they start creating these rules, or they start with the harassing and just like trying to make it as miserable as possible for this person. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, why? Like, I've always been someone, let's say I've been with a company or a team, where I've tried to be the most accepting of that new person, because, hey, this is new territory. They don't know anybody here. Let's bring them in. Let's make them part of the family, versus, oh, well, danger, you know, stranger danger or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, this person shouldn't be here. And it's just like, I don't get why that's so difficult and why that even happens in society. I really don't know what the natural reason for that would be.
Yeah, I feel like in that situation, a lot of the time I see people that have been at a company for a long time, so they have seniority, and then a new person comes along, and say that new person's really balls to the wall about it. They're working as hard as they can, and that the person that's been there for a while, they see that, and they're like, this guy's going to make me look bad, so I'm just going to start rumors or whatever and try to put this person down to where they don't want to work here anymore because they can't make me look bad. So it's, I don't know, if you're a hard worker and you're around people that are chit-chatting all day and not getting anything done, there are a lot of pitter-patter, not a lot of let's get at her. So it's, I don't know.
I've never heard that one.
More pitter-patter, let's get at her. You never heard it?
No, I have never heard that.
But yeah, it's a lot easier to spot out who's not doing work if somebody is working really hard around them, because you're like, oh my God, that guy's working really hard and these guys over here are doing absolutely nothing.
Well, we just get so lax in society where we'll just keep going through the motions, whether, you know, it's in a job or going to the gym, to where you stop trying to improve and look for new opportunity. And I think for me, that's what's been cool about, you know, maybe changing jobs as much as I can. As soon as you go into a new workplace, you can always see where the opportunity is being missed, where there can be more organization, more efficiency. And I think that's always been my, you know, a mindset. I've just always been able to see that very clearly. And it's just like, how have you been here this long and you don't see this? Like, is it that you're just blinded, or is it because that you just are going through the motions and you're just here to get a check? And I think for me, you know, having that entrepreneurial mindset, or also being that athlete to where you're always trying to be your best and improve every day. And if that's how you look at a company, or even your marriage or your family, it's always, if you can always put that at the forefront of your mind, like, how can we improve? How can I be a better son? How can I be a better brother? How can I be a better dad? How can I be a better husband? Like, if you put that at the forefront of your mind, you won't ever really fail.
Yeah, there's not a limit to how far you can go.
Right. If you put it at the forefront of your mind and you're realistic about it and you actually, you know, are willing to look at yourself and see what you're doing. Now, if you just put it at the forefront of your mind and say I'm great and are an arrogant punk, then, that's not going to work. But
that's kind of like the thing we were talking about, religion. It's, if you believe in something and you really truly believe it and you live your life around that, then you're going to reap the rewards. But if you just say, oh yeah, I believe in this religion, so I'm going to heaven because I believe in this religion, but you don't really believe in that religion, then you're not going to see any of the benefits from it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just going to continue to go in the motions. Nothing's going to ever change. Mm-hmm. But and that's somehow where people get this in their mind where that's okay, and it's this robotic system to where they've somehow told themselves that this is what it means to go to heaven, and it's all right. And I don't know how you do that, but somehow I think it's called compartmentalization.
Yeah.
And somehow people are able to do that. I'm not able to do that very well. But, you know, like, what do you think is more important? Is it the desire to be accepted or the fear of rejection?
I think it's the desire to be accepted. I think that everybody needs to feel accepted in some way. I mean, everybody's going to deal with rejection. That's just kind of, there's death, there's taxes, there's rejection. Everybody's going to deal with it, regardless of how far out there you put yourself. But the feeling of being accepted, I feel like it's something that, it's almost a requirement. Like, in order to live a good, healthy life, you need to be accepted in at least some area of your life. If you don't, then it's going to, I don't know, it's just going to negatively affect your life.
But can you really have true fulfillment unless you're accepted by the people that you want to be accepted by, or have that acceptance that you want? For example, let's say that you're, let's say you want to be a professional baseball player.
Okay.
And you get acceptance from a little league baseball team and everybody praises you and acknowledges you and gives you that admiration, but you never have a college coach reach out to you with any offers or a professional coach reach out to you and any offers. Is the acceptance that you get from this lesser team, is it as valuable? Is it worth anything because you're not getting the acceptance that you actually crave from what it is you want to do?
Huh. I think it's the people that are accepting. I think it's valuable to decipher the people that are accepting you because you're getting a minor league offer, and the people that are accepting of you because they see how hard you've worked. They see everything. They see your willingness to, they see your passion. They see your desire. I feel like it's important to differentiate the people that will accept you for who you are, whether you don't accept that offer or you go to play college at a whatever kind of school, whether you are just a walk-on or whatever. Whereas the people that are accepting of you because you got a minor league offer, those people aren't really accepting of you. I feel like that's just kind of a, oh, this is really cool, you got this, so good job. But it's more so the people in every aspect of your life. I feel like people can't really accept you in one area and not another. They are either accepting of who you are in every aspect or they're not.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I would say I had previously had this struggle to where I wasn't as concerned with getting acceptance or being accepted as I was about the fear of being rejected. And so I would do everything I possibly could, would be to please people, to make friends, even though these friends didn't really seem like they were people I really wanted to hang out with or they had any interest in hanging out with me. Whenever I would see them at the gym, I would always still try to reach out and say hi, or, you know, be ask them if they want to go do something. And then after, you know, maybe 20 times of asking them want to go do something and they're always busy and stuff like that, I realized it's like, all right. But that feeling of rejection, I absolutely hated. And one of the main reasons I asked this is because in society today, with social media, with review websites like Google Maps, is that the amount of damage that we can spread towards one person, towards one business, towards one product is astounding. And, you know, like, let's say me and you, we were talking last week about making up, you know, make-believe stories about aliens or whatever. Right. But it's the same thing. Is creating a lie or a rumor about someone can spread so quickly, and oftentimes those rumors spread quicker than if I was to say something positive about Jake's been the best brother that I've ever had, you know, I appreciate everything about him. Or if I say something negative about you or what you did, that's going to spread so much quicker. Yep. And it just disintegrates your name to, it's like, you know, like, take, I'm not saying that President Trump is good or he's bad, but it's just like, you know, one small thing that the news or that propaganda brings, and it just spreads like wildfire. And some of the things may not really even be true. And it's just, it's really sad how bad negativity spreads versus positivity.
Right. Yeah.
And so for me, I was always guarding myself from that fear of rejection, or just that I would always hope that people, they don't have to speak positively, but I would always hope that people just wouldn't speak negatively of me. Cause that just really feels like that hurts a lot more than the pleasure of somebody, you know, saying something nice about you.
Right. And it's one thing to say something negatively behind your back. There's a difference between saying something negative and being constructive with criticism. And being a realist, as like, you don't want a bunch of yes men around you, because that's a very artificial feeling where everybody just agrees with every single thing you say. It's like, okay, how much do they actually agree with, and how much are they just saying that they agree with because they want me to give them a high five or something? I don't know. But it's important to have people in your corner that give you good constructive criticism and say, hey, maybe this or that or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, something that I've been saying recently, like, I've been telling my wife, like, this right here is what matters. Like the connection between you and I, this matters. Like, all the decisions that you make throughout the day, everything you do at work, I mean, yeah, it matters because you're spending your time doing it. It's something that you care about. That matters. But at the end of the day, if that job stopped, like if your boss decided, hey, this work's going to shut down, it doesn't matter. But like, the people, the relationships, your family, that is what matters. And I'm going to support you no matter what you do. I obviously want you to be the best person that you can be, but I'm going to support you regardless of what you do. But I'm going to push you to be the best person. But nothing that is out of your control, you can't focus on that and include that as something that you should be stressing about. Again, that's easier said than done, but it's good to have that mindset, I think.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. But just like you said, it's much easier said than done when you have that burden, when you have the worry and the finances. And so right. as we go over all these topics that we've talked over tonight, as we bring this to a full circle and we close out this episode, real true acceptance, it comes from self-acceptance. It comes from accepting yourself, who you are, what you've done. Now, obviously, you have to be honest with yourself, and you have to look at yourself in the mirror and be able to say, I gave this my best. But true acceptance, self-acceptance is true acceptance, and it's the only thing that really matters in life. And that's what we have to get to, a point to where we can accept ourselves. I know that I used to be worried about, like, oh, well, my friends may not like me because of my car or what I'm wearing or what my house looks like. And I was comparing myself to all these things. And it's like, I have to accept Chad for the car. Is this car acceptable for me to drive? And if I determine it is and others don't, then those aren't for me. Those aren't people that I want to spend my time with. And if these clothes from TJ Maxx or Marshalls are acceptable to me, and I like how they look, and I like who I am with them, if they're acceptable to me, but they're not acceptable to other people, then those aren't people that I choose to be around with or I want to be around with.
Right.
And man, dude, once you can come to that realization and you can truly accept yourself, and when you're looking for friends or whoever, and you realize that you don't have to try to be someone you're not. Now, I'm not saying you don't try to better yourself or you don't try to continue to progress and improve, but you're when it comes to the small things and what separates you and makes your personality unique, and you feel that you have to change those things to be okay for someone, that's not self-acceptance, mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, man, I'm still learning, you know, what true self-acceptance is at the age of 40, and how I can go into a gym and just kind of look straight in my face and hit the weights without, like, you know, trying to, you know, see if anybody else wants to talk to me or anything, and just being comfortable with myself and who I am and leaving the gym. Now, obviously, my personality is much more geared towards wanting to be around people, but If it's just a bunch of people who I don't care about, who are jerks and they're not very friendly, then I should be just fine going in there, doing what I've went in there to accomplish and getting out without saying a word to anybody.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a good closing note there.
I mean, that's where life comes from, man. That's where you really find purpose. That's where you really let loose and find out who you are when you're able to accept yourself and you don't hold yourself accountable to how others look at you or how you think they're going to accept you based on what you do or what you wear or who you are as an individual. Just keep pursuing and pushing yourself to be the best that you can possibly be. Accept that version of yourself and accept that version that you make mistakes. You're going to get better, and that if people can't accept you, then those people aren't for you.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, if you're not able to accept yourself and you're not able to love yourself, then what is it all even for?
Yeah, that's the true meaning of success.
Yeah.
Is looking yourself in the mirror and saying, I love who I am, I love what I'm about, and I love what I represent. And if you can't say that, then you need to consider the things and the actions that you're doing and how you can rearrange your priorities, make them better, so that you can say that one day.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Well, man, I enjoyed talking about that. Yeah. I think it's your week to share a story about Pops.
Oh, yeah. So one of my favorite memories is whenever we would get together for like Thanksgiving or a big cookout or Christmas Eve or anything like that, we would always prepare all the food. The kids would be out in the living room. Dad would be out in the other living room talking with our uncles and aunts and whatever. And mom and our aunts and our sisters would be preparing the food or whatever. And everybody's getting ready. Finally, all the food's prepared. Everybody gets around and mom says, all right, who's going to say the prayer? And everybody looks at dad every single time and he'd be like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Everybody'd be like, oh, come on, come on. And he'd end up saying the prayer. It's always the, all right. And then he'd say the prayer. It's every single time. He's like, all right, this is the last one. And then next time it comes around, it's all right, Dad, you got to say the prayer. All right, whatever, last one. Every single time, he always got stuck doing the prayer.
And he would always start it off, dear little 5-pound Lord baby Jesus. Yeah. No, he wouldn't say that. Freaking Bobby said that.
Dear little sweet 5-pound baby Jesus.
No, yeah. Yeah, you'd always act like it was this great big duty.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Everybody always asked me to do it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, Dad, it's just so terrible, isn't it? Sorry that we appreciate you being able to say grace. That's our bad.
Everybody put in all this hard work, and you have to stand up there for 30 seconds and say a prayer. We're so sorry. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot on his
own. Oh, yeah.
But, well, we made it through 8, Jake. We're 2 away from 10. Been super excited. I appreciate just getting to talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
Hear your thoughts. And we hope everybody's out there listening. We'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas for future podcast episodes. You know, we're going to be hopefully at some point adding some guests and just kind of seeing where this takes us. If we turn it into comedy, laughing, or we don't really know where this is going to go, but enjoy talking and figuring out how to podcast and talk and share life.
Yeah, there's talks behind the scenes of a whole bunch of different ideas for different routes we want to take it and whatnot. So it'd just be interesting to experiment with a bunch of other stuff. And yeah, like you said, guests at some point, see who we can get on here, share their stories. Maybe if they knew Dad, share their favorite story of Dad. I think it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's plenty of those that we haven't even thought about.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of those probably involve fall language, though.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
We're trying to do a family-friendly episode, folks.
Yeah, yeah.
But thanks for joining us for week 8, guys. We'll catch you on the flip side. See you next week.
The flippity flip. See you later.